So what then, what do you want to consider then? Some great matter. What?
Could you talk about the Big Bang?
You're not talking about your wedding right now, I suppose. Well, it's a very paradoxical notion. People probably picture it rather naively. Probably the highest percentage of people in the world have heard about this somehow or other. And it suggests the idea of an explosion from some point, you see. Probably most people don't think about it much beyond something like that. Talking in terms of this concept as it is presently proposed, the naive sense of the Big Bang, as I just described, is an explosion from a point in space. There has to be a space in which that can occur. The event is conceived in that picture as something happening in an existing space. But actually, space is one of the things that appears in the Big Bang. It's the space maker, too. So it doesn't occur within a space that you can picture. Where does it occur, then, exactly? If there is no space to begin with, the Big Bang itself is the process in which space itself is manifested. Then where does the Big Bang itself occur? And where is space, anyway?
In consciousness.
Sounds like a good idea. Apart from answering it in those other terms, it's useful just to consider the question and feel the unanswerability of it somehow, but also there is a feeling somehow about just how such a thing does occur. In any case, where is space? Rather than answer it, consider it. Because that's where it is now. Where is it? Is space in relation to anything? Such that there could be something outside it? And yet there is no space prior to the Big Bang. At least in the present conception. Maybe it does occur in a space. But not the space viewed in the so-called material universe, you see.
Right.
As Carl was suggesting, but I've also given him many clues over the years. It is the space of consciousness itself, which is identical to light itself, radiance itself, brightness itself, energy itself. That's where it occurs, wherever that is, you see. Absolute. How can there be anything? Why is there anything? An immense nothing that's not even a nothing is suddenly going to be the source of a something? Why is there anything at all? Where? In the midst of what? Out of what? So that space always already exists. The space that appears in the Big Bang is a space from a point of view. What else about it? Thoughts, conceptual thoughts occur on the periphery of the embodied personality. Perception is deeper. Tonight, you've been relaxing the conceptual mind, the whole conceptual mechanism, the superficial mechanism, adapted to your social round and so on. Relax deeper than that into the perceptual dimension of the being. And it is rather open. So your perception feels like it enters deeply into what you're viewing. There's a kind of tacit sense of great unity. And that open perceptiveness, not agitated or made superficial by thought. Necessarily, then, the process of this sadhana is one in which the hyperactivity of the conceptual mind is felt beyond. It remains usable, of course, and a tool of discrimination. But is relaxed in the more consistent moments of contemplation, you see. The spiritual process in my company then involves this open perceptual person. You perceive me spiritually with a different body. The subtler body. If you feel me, my energy, you see. So part of the ability to do the seeing yoga is to be able to relax beyond that hyperactivity of conceptual mind and be open like a flower, you see, sensitive, simply. And that same mechanism that is naturally sensitive then becomes a mechanism of conductivity in your communion with me. This conceptual mind out front, superficially, you see, is on and on all the time, constantly modifying the force of being and changing your state, setting up the body mind constantly in different ways. Almost like a computer. Keeps changing emotions and positive, negative, and puzzling you and dissociating you and making you seek and on. So when it relaxes, the subtler depth of the being, you see, of the body mind, allowed to flower. Even in the flesh. This is something Krishnamurti was sensitive to. This was basically the summation of his understanding. To not merely treat the conceptual mind as the enemy and try to stop it, you see, but examine it, consider it. It is not reality, it is something that takes time. Maybe a fraction of a second, but nonetheless, it's an event in time, all of this conceptual mind, you see. It can't be in touch with reality. The medium of reality. It is a time mechanism, a memory mechanism, a superficial organization mechanism. It has its uses, but it's not to be the constant. If it's the constant, it is a burden and shuts down the body-mind and confuses it. So understand this and relax the, voluntarily, spontaneously, freely relax the mind, you see. goes with his point of view, something like this, in my own words. What he was talking about was a relaxation of the superficial chattering of conceptual mind and so forth, and becoming openly sensitized at the perceptual level of the personality, and be given over to that perceptual state of awareness without mental chatter, and allowed to control your behavior and so on. This is his idea. Not all that unusual, really. Even in the shamanistic cultures, it did the same thing. You relax the superficial mind, don't be so busy as you enter into the trials of the internal life. Be tuned into it, you see. In other words, relax the superficial life, the conceptual mind, and so forth, and enter this in-depth dimension of energy and feeling. Well, that's the open-ended perceptual personality. It's always been considered an essential of the religious life, then. To move beyond all the superficial preoccupations and mental chatter and so forth, to enter into a state of ease, of peace, of contemplative disposition. But effectively, in terms of how it deals with the body-mind altogether, it's moving out of the superficial aspects of the body-mind personality into the subtler dimension of it. That is in direct contact with the energy of existence.